listening to The Burn. Gaming stuff, blazing fast.
Welcome to a new episode of The Burn, a podcast about gaming done blazing fast. I'm Aviv Menoach.
And I'm Yehuda Chalfon.
Hello, Yehuda.
Hello, Aviv.
For a moment, in my mind, I heard Omer Kaplan. and I was caught off guard for a moment. I was expecting it to be Omer.
He was the original burner, so...
Yes. How are you doing?
Fine. Yesterday we had... So my boss is leaving. When you hear this episode, she probably left because we're not broadcasting it. So we're having some celebrations for her leaving. And last week we had an Otley run, which I discussed it about the other podcast. And yesterday we went for escape room and... Indian restaurant and drinks and all that stuff. And Indian restaurant had our spiciest dish. And if you eat it, you get ice cream and a certificate that you are brave. Look at that, I'm brave. And it made me laugh so hard.
Was it like spicy in Israeli terms?
It was spicy in Indian terms.
So no, I get that. I was just wondering if the base spiciness level in the UK is higher or lower than in Israel.
About the same.
Okay. I don't usually eat spicy food. That for me is probably higher than I would eat, but it's interesting.
Yes.
Cool. So we are The Burn, and we are talking about games. In each episode of the show, we discuss a game we are playing and liked or disliked or some of both, and then some recent gaming news. You can subscribe to the podcast at theburn.live. Support our show by visiting support.theburn.live, where you can find cool games to play and our affiliate links. And join our Discord community at discord.theburn.live, which is the place you actually can listen to the show while it's being recorded, if you wish to do so. The game for this episode is Pathfinder, Wrath of the Righteous, which is a very, 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 very long and good CRPG by Owlcat Games. And it has, besides the fact that it's good, it has a special place in our hearts because we played the Wrath of the Righteous tabletop adventure path. So we are kind of familiar with the story and stuff, and it's very interesting and special to see it come to life in a video game medium. So Yehuda, why don't you start us off to talk about your experience with the game?
Okay, so start the game is from Owlcat, and they made Kingmaker before.
Yes.
Which was a decent conversion, because Kingmaker itself was a very open world, very adventure in the tabletop, but they made a good effort. And now they went on Wrath of the Righteous, which is the most epic adventure path the Paizo have, because you get to be a mythic level
adventurers, characters.
Creature, why not? Everything loves. Yes. And also, so the adventure gets you from level 1 to level 20 and mythic 10, which is the highest thing you can ever get in Pathfinder, which is awesome. And the adventure itself is very epic. You go to fight demons, you want to close the world that spawns demon from the abyss into Golarion, and it's very awesome. And you command an army, and you control more of a fort with some settlements next to it, and it amazing. And they did a good job with Kingmaker. So I said, why not? And I supported it in Kickstarter, I think, 4 years ago. The Kickstarter was happening, or 3 years ago, or something like that. And it's a good game. It lacks some things. Most of the things is the graphic is kind of old and not very high polygon. So when you zoom into the characters, they look a bit meh. And then especially when you go to busy places where you can see they ran out of models, you can see the same kind of demo like 5 million times.
That's kind of true. It's not a spoiler. But on the other hand, the game, well, when you are at the normal isometric level, the game looks amazing. It's very colorful. Kingmaker at the beginning was, as you say, kind of meh, because all the environments was forest. And it took until you got to the first world stuff to be actually interesting visually. Here, from the beginning, the city itself, where when you start a game, Canabras, looks good, and then you fall into the underground, and the underground looks good. And the game is very varied after that. You have locations that are snowing, and locations that are more deserty. So that the game has that for it. I don't know if to say the graphic is old, I think that it's a resource kind of thing, because it's like 100+ hour game with many, many, many systems that we will argue some of them shouldn't be the game and just hinder it. So I guess they did the best they could with the resources they had.
Yeah. Going back to the models, so you can see when they you go to a city, when you have humanoids, Golarianites, you have a lot. But when you go to the abyss, there is a point where the entire city is basically demons. All of them looks the same. All the succubi looks the same. All the incubi looks the same.
Yeah, there was only one model for each demon monster thing.
Yeah. And so you're like... So every time you see someone that looks a bit different, you know, okay, this is someone I need to talk to or kill. So it's like the meme. Can you spot the main character in anime?
Yeah. Which is also in old animation, where you will see that the background is in a color, and then the places where the character interact is a slightly different color. So you know, oh, this is the stone that the character is going to sit on, or something like that. Yeah. And again, it's also a thing where both those games, Kingmaker and Wrath of the Righteous, part of their development was to imitate the old Infinity Engine CRPGs. And that's so much like those games, because even if you don't refer to the models, you go to a city, you press tab to see all the nameplates, and you have peasant, noble, a named character. And you know that the named character is either like a merchant or a quest giver or something like that.
Yep. Yeah, it's kind of annoying, but it's a good game. I wish they would make more models. But like you said, it's probably because of resources.
There is a thing.
I prefer a more polished game that runs well than a few more models. So it's just me being nitpicker.
Yeah, and there is something,
because I really hate the Abyss episode.
And there is something to be said about the fact that Wrath of the Righteous, unlike Kingmaker, was not completely broken when it came out. So there is that. Kingmaker, when it came out, you couldn't finish the game because it bugged. So they did a better job with Wrath of the Righteous. There is a line to be drawn, and each of us can decide where you draw it. For making a game match conventions of its genre and of its type, because a lot of the things that bother me in Wrath of the Righteous are due to the fact that they are trying to imitate the older CRPG games like Baldur's Gate and Icewind Dale and stuff, and then also tabletop role-playing game in general. They do a lot in order to make you feel like this is a tabletop game, and oftentimes it's to the detriment of the game. An example of this is overworld travel and time passage in general, which I really don't like. I didn't like it in Kingmaker, and I don't like it here, especially where you couple it with the annoying amount of pop-ups you need to click through. So you go, you travel to somewhere, the game will ask you, are you sure? Yes, I'm sure. Travel, random encounter. Click to enter into the random encounter. Okay, we do the encounter, we go out. The game will once again ask you, are you sure if you want to travel? And on and on and on. There is a lot of situations where the game pop up unnecessary notifications and acceptance dialogues and stuff like that, which is a UX problem and has nothing to do with the rest of it, but still. And then the part of the... The fact that the game feels so heavy, and then again, I'm starting to talk about the bad stuff before I tell people how much I love it, is just the fact that the entire game is designed to look like a tabletop role character sheet, and that brings with it other set of issues that we talked about in our chat. About the game really, really doing a bad job in explaining how Pathfinder works, what you can do, what you can't do. And I think personally that if they would have left all the conventions aside, they would forget about the old games, they would forget about tabletops, they would just focus on doing a good contemporary RPG, they could have still used Pathfinder rules, but make it so a complete noob that picks up the video game can play it. And currently, it's very difficult. If you haven't played Pathfinder, either Kingmaker before or the tabletop game, you will have a very hard time to understand how this game works. Some of my successes are only due to the fact that I played a campaign and I had people explain the rules to me. So those are the bad stuff. Let's talk about the good stuff. The good stuff is the fact that I played 35 hours of this game so far. I finished chapter 2 out of 6. And each time I sat down to play this game, I was completely sucked in, completely disassociated from my surrounding. I couldn't stop playing it. I looked up from the computer and suddenly it was midnight and I wanted to keep playing and I had to force myself to not keep playing. Be quiet, dog. the game not only has a very good story, which it takes from the Pathfinder Adventure Path, it has good companion characters that are characterized in a very distinct, unique manner. It's a group of companion. I think it's one of the best group of companions out of all like RPGs with companions. Obviously Persona will be the top of the top, But I think Wrath of the Righteous is out there with the recent Dragon Age and stuff. It's on par with Baldur's Gate 2, I think. Very, very unique, very memorable characters. Not all of them, but most of them. I think the only character that is kind of meh is the one they took from the iconic Pathfinder character, which is Scylla. Which she doesn't have anything for her. Camellia is very interesting because for most of the game you don't know whose side she's on. She has a necklace that obscure her alignment, so you don't know if she's a good character or an evil character, and some of her dialogue throws you off completely. Then you have some actually evil characters, but are not a caricature of what an evil character will be. They are people. They're just evil in the alignment system, but they are more selfish, more indulgent, in the manner of Darren. Is like a highborn with a stick up his ass, and he let everyone knows it, and he's so unapologetic in his snobbery and cruelty sometimes, like, is sort of like a supremacist that not necessarily want to kill everyone else. He just knows that he's better and he's in half health, so he will live on while the rest of the population will die, and he doesn't care. So Darren is so fun, although I don't play with him a lot because he doesn't fit the combination I have with the other characters. And then you have Regil, which is one of the best characters ever, but is such an ass. But not because, like, not for the Darren reasons. He's not a snob, and he's not think he's better than you. He's a snob because he's a lawful evil character. He follows the rules to a T, and he will kill anyone that doesn't. Which is very fun in another manner. And then you have Nanyo, which is a fox character that forgot she's a fox. And she's very interesting, because the only thing that drives her is the pursuit of knowledge, and she doesn't care about anything else. And we can go on and on. All of the characters outside of Scylla are good. I just got the assassin guy. I don't know anything about him yet. He just tried to kill a Balor in the Settled Dresden, and ever since I finished the Dresden arc, I haven't talked to him yet, so I don't know anything about him. So yeah, good, very good companions. And then just the combat system. The combat system is amazing. And obviously it's because it's so tied to the Pathfinder tabletop game. But I play in turn-based mode, and it's literally playing the tabletop game. You get your turns, you get like the actions and the movements and all of that. And all of your abilities and stuff, and it's great. I love the combat system. I play on normal. I started in casual and I found it too easy, so I bumped it up. So yeah, combat's really good. And the thing we won't talk about because we don't play with it is the meta systems. In Kingmaker.
Okay, I did play.
Oh, you
see, my first go. Yeah, my first go in the game, I played with it. It's horrible. It's so horrible. It's just bad. There's nothing good about it. In the trailers of the game, the army combat, which is a big part of the tabletop version, it looked like Heroes of Might and Magic-esque fights.
Yeah, a bit.
But then you realize when you play it, it's just garbage. You have one model that says, I'm a spearman and I have 5 million spearmen under me. And then you realize this model is just an NPC, only bigger. So it looks like shit because it doesn't have enough polygons to look good at that size. And everything looks meh. And the combat itself is so long, and it takes forever to do anything. And you need to move armies around the board, which, like Aviv said, when you move yourself around the board, it's annoying. You know, you need to move armies. And then you move them all, and you have to pass the time. So the armies will get to the points they need to go, so the army can open you a barricade or a keep or whatever. And then so your character can go there and pass through, and like, oh, fuck, this is so boring. And management the kingdom, you build things. Okay, it will take a week for it to build. Awesome. What the fuck do I do this week? Because my army is going there. I need to wait until... Otherwise, my companion won't go on. Okay. Pass time, day. Yay, it's been a week. Let's continue. So,
Yeah, so in Kingmaker, you had the kingdom building. And the beginning, you just had your main city. And then you started... building other cities, and by the end of the game you build a lot of cities, and that wasn't very interesting, but it was not as annoying, because you still, like, your party still traveled anywhere and stuff. Here they put in the game army combat, and then they also put city building when you get to Dresden, and then after that, whenever you conquer a fortress, you can build that fortress. And that's just a lot. And that's too much. I put it all on auto. And it in automatic mode, you basically, the campaign is progressed as you do quests. So there are paths you can't take at the beginning. And then after you do some quests or time passes, you get new paths to walk through. My only... sort of complaint is that I would have wanted to see a representation on the map of the armies and the of both sides while I do the campaign, because I think conceptually you still want to see that there is a war going on. And unfortunately, once you automate the crusades, all of the map, all of the armies are off the map, so you don't see anything. So I would want to see a representation of the war going on, just for flavor, even if I'm not actively controlling them. I really want them not to do those meta mechanics in the future. Although, again, this is part of being very dedicated to the source material. Kingmaker had the kingdom building from the campaign pass, and the crusades are also from the adventure pass, so that's what they were doing. But overall, also think about, if it took me 35 hours on normal to finish chapter 2, if I had to do the crusades on that chapter, it would have been at least 10 more hours of playtime.
Yes.
The game has its weaknesses, but its strengths are really strong. And if you like CRPGs, it's a very, very good CRPG to play. Yep.
Yeah, I highly recommend it. One of the another funny thing is, if you go to the Steam folder of the game, it's called Pathfinder Second Adventure, which makes me laugh so hard. It's like, let's put this placeholder here, and we'll come back to it later. I'm like, oh, fuck.
Oh, a lot of games have like project names that are kept when they build the game for commercial releases.
Yeah, but it's still funny.
Yep, it's funny. Okay, let's look at something that were on the news recently. So first of all, we are getting very soon, what's the release date? Let's see. A game called Mage Seeker, which is the second spin-off game from League of Legends. So if you are not familiar, a couple of years ago, Riot started a huge expansion of its properties. And beside the fact that they are doing comics and web series and stuff like that, and obviously Arcane, and announced a bunch of new games, that Valorant was the first, but we are going to get like on MMO things, I don't remember. They also started cooperating with other studios to build new games under an umbrella called Riot Forge. So the first game that was released a year ago, approximately, and it's now got a new enhanced edition for current generation consoles like PS5 and stuff. It's Ruined King, which is by Airship Syndicate. They are building RPGs. They did the Battle Chasers Night War game, and it's a very good game. I played some of it, not a lot of it, and it's a Western take on a JRPG kind of thing. It has some League of Legends connections. For example, when you play a combat, there are lanes you can put your characters in, and the different lane has different effects on the combat, and sometimes you need to use faster or slower attacks, stuff like that, in order to avoid enemy abilities. Very interesting game. And the new game, Mageseeker, is by a company called Digital Sun, which previously did Moonlighter. And a Moonlighter is a very good game. It's a roguelike RPG with a shopkeeping sim element. So you basically go in dungeons. Think about Hades. If you went on the run and collected a bunch of things, and then you go back and you open a store and you sell the things you find to get money and upgrade and stuff. So Moonlighter was a very good game. I really enjoyed it. And yeah, they're doing the Mageseeker, a League of Legends story. And each of those stories tell a different thing in the world of League of Legends. So if you watch Arcane, it was Piltover and Zone story, the cities. And then Ruined King takes place in the Pirate Islands that I don't remember the name of. And obviously all of the characters are League of Legends hero champions. So Mageseeker, the main character is called Silas, which I don't know anything about, but still, looks great. So this is something that's coming. What's the release? I wanted the release date. It's soon, I think April. Yeah, April 18th. For everything. It's going to be for everything. Switch, Xbox, PlayStation, PC. So you can play it on everything. So this is one thing. And then, speaking of PC Store, Epic opened the Epic Game Store for self-publishing. So previously, it only games that had, how do you call it, like a contract or an agreement with Epic were published on the Epic Game Store. And now everyone can pay $100 and go into the developer portal and release their game, which is the same as Steam. Steam is also a $100 fee. And there are two big distinctions they put forth in order to distinguish them from Steam. And the first is no adult content. So if you know, you should know that Steam is full of porno games. And they don't care. Like, they decided they don't care at some point. So Epic Games do care. And they're going to prohibit those. Obviously, it's yet to be seen that, well, where is the line? Like, is an, I don't know, erotic novel versus a honey pop. So we need to see. I personally don't care, but apparently they do. But it will also limit some of the sludge that goes into those stores, because Steam is full of a lot of sludge that is irrelevant for anyone. So hopefully. And then the other thing, which is a lot more interesting, is any multiplayer game that is released on Epic Game Store, plus, like, as long as it's not exclusive to the Epic Game Store, for example, if you release on Steam and Epic, it has to have cross play with other players. So they are not going to allow a situation where you buy the game on Epic and you play only with Epic players versus Steam players. And that is a direct call out to Steam, because Steam has their service called Steamworks, and any game that uses Steamworks is limited to only what happened in Steam. So a lot of the time, if you buy the game directly from the publisher or on GOG or stuff like that, you will be limited on what you can do, because on Steam they have Steamworks. That's also true for modding, for example, and other things. It actually made it so companies in several instances stopped releasing games on other services, because they didn't want to put the efforts to basically duplicate their systems on other stores that are not Steam. So Epic is taking a somewhat of a stand in not allowing this situation. They also have better value for developers than Steam. They take a lower cut, and if you build your game in the Unreal game engine, Unreal Engine, they don't double dip. So games on Unreal, if you're a developer, you can use the Unreal Engine for free. And then only if you get like more than $1 million in revenue, you pay a revenue split with Epic. But if you sell it on the Epic Games Store, the sales in the store, they are not going to charge you both for the engine and for the store. So they're not double dipping. And that was something that was true from the beginning of the Epic Games Store. That's something that they put forth from the beginning. The overall, good for developers, but two problems. A, Epic Games Store, and that's my interpretation. That's not, we are past the facts here into my analysis. A, the Epic Games Store is a terrible software, and it has terrible discoverability. I can't even imagine what's going to happen when people are going to flood their system with thousands of games. It's going to be nigh unusable.
Yep.
So that's one. And then the other thing is the fact that it's going to get flooded. And we saw it with Steam. And not that... Oh, most people won't notice it, but it's a problem. It was a problem when Steam moved from like their closed garden to Greenlight to their open models, the open publishing model, self-publishing model, whatever. More games got into the store, it became harder to have discoverability and harder to find games in the platform, and Steam has gone a long way to improve their store and improve discoverability because of those things. Hopefully Epic will do the same, but overall I won't say it's bad, because it's not. It's good. We want to have games. We want developers to have the opportunity to put the games on there. It's a challenging situation. That's what I will say. But that's it. That's we are past our time, so we'll finish here.
Go play Wrath of the Righteous.
Yes.
Go play Wrath of the Righteous. And eventually, their new game will be released, the Rogue Trader.
Yeah.
And it should be amazing because it's not, as far as I know, it's not based on a written adventure. It's just the system, one of the many, many systems of Rogue Trader. Rogue Trader is part of Warhammer 40K. And I'm really looking forward for this game because it will be an original something that I haven't played or read before with Kingmaker and Wrath of the Righteous. And yay, I love Warhammer role-playing games. So let's see how this goes.
Yep. Okay, that is all we have for the show today. Thank you for listening. You can find us online on Twitter. I'm at Aisel and Yuda is at Yushuv. Don't forget to subscribe to the podcast, comment and leave your reviews and your preferred listening app. You can find all the links at The Burn It Live. And finally, our opening theme was created by Ann Durko with vocals by Fishy Twitch, both on Twitter as well. That's it for now. And until next time, goodbye.
Goodbye.